This podcast of the Radio Cafe comes to you via radiocafe.org, where you can find more information and many other podcasts. Technical support comes from Studio X, providing website design, hosting, e-commerce, and social media marketing, serving Santa Fe to the world since 1994. Find out more at studiox.com. I'd like now to welcome to the Radio Cafe, Tings Chalk. She is an artist at the Santa Fe Art Institute. She's a resident here at the Institute from where we are taping. She has a book called Undocumented, The Architecture of Migrant Detention. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Thank you for having me.
So you are a visual artist, a graphic designer, architecture, architectural drawing. All of these things are the media with which you express a lot about migration, about immigrant detention. Now, you're from Canada, or you live in Canada.
Mm-hmm.
How did you get into the whole topic of migrant detention?
Yeah, I immigrated at a young age from Hong Kong to Canada, but it was really in the last 6 years or so that I got really active in organizing in migrant communities, specifically with undocumented people living in Canada, people with precarious immigration status like migrant workers. And through that experience, I started also organizing with people in immigration detentions, which is where mostly people who are undocumented are.
And so, I mean, one of the things that is really important about this subject of architecture and detention is that it's really hard to find out information.
Exactly. And that's kind of the meaning, you know, the title of the book, Undocumented, it speaks to the aspect of documentation twofold. One is that the people who are undocumented, who get locked away in these places, but that the places themselves are very much undocumented. Finding information about where they're located sometimes is even difficult. Finding photographs, finding drawings or plans. I filed multiple access to information requests and frequently basically denied any access to these institutions. So it's very intentional by the state and by the government to keep these places and keep the people who are locked up inside them hidden out of view.
One of the things that you cover in the book or illustrate in the book is what these actual spaces are like. And you haven't been inside because nobody gets to go inside except involuntarily or people who work there. What are these spaces like?
Mm-hmm. So part of the project of representing spaces that are so invisibilized is trying to acquire enough information that I can visually represent it. So I would speak with allied, you know, sometimes it's lawyers who have visited those sites, but specific places, right? They can visit like the visitors area and the council area. And I would sit down with them and draw plans and trying to recreate from their memory what some of those spaces look like. Some of it are from testimonies from people who have been detained inside them, who've also seen fragments, because the way these institutions work is also depending on your position within them, you only get a small grasp of the larger picture, right? And so it was kind of reconstructing these places. Some of it is also looking at design standards that are available. I also looked at design standards created by the Immigration and Customs Enforcement here in the U.S., as well as international recommendations for prisons and detention centers. And I mentioned to you with the International Red Cross, for instance, they put out recommendations. So through all these kinds of sources, I was able to recreate a fictional detention center, but based on the experiences of people and experiences of real places.
So not entirely fictional.
Yeah, it's not entirely fictional. It's more of like a generic or genericized detention center.
And when one leafs through this book, there's a lot of drawings of these places. And of course, they are able to be seen from the outside if you can figure out where they are.
Mm-hmm.
And this sense of what it's like when you walk down these halls, and there's a kind of weird corporate standardized feeling to them. The surveillance cameras and you can almost hear the doors clanging shut because they're thick metal doors, mm-hmm. and those door closers and so on.
Mm-hmm.
And it does really make you start to think about what it does to people who don't get to go outside, or mm-hmm. who's outside is so circumscribed and so unnatural, really.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. I mean, there's lots of documentation out these days around the psychological impact of such spaces. And there's even, you know, a campaign based here in the U.S. trying to get architects to ban basically the design of solitary confinement units and execution chambers. But one thing I really want to highlight in these drawings, and I'm glad you brought it up in terms of like you can hear the doors or they kind of look like these corporate institutional settings, is that they are very banal. You know, I think there's a lot of sensationalism in terms of how we want to think about prisons and detention centers, TV shows, movies that really, elevate the level of violence that we think about, or that, you know, how bad are criminals or these immigrants. And I think what that does is that helps justify the incarceration of people that we think deserve to be in them. I'm coming from a position that whether someone has quote unquote committed a crime or who are born in the wrong place or have the wrong documentation shouldn't be incarcerated. That shouldn't be the state response of how we treat human beings. And walking through these hallways, they're really familiar in a way. They're banal, familiar. They're the same kinds of concrete block or the fluorescent lighting that we see. So it's in a way to bring us back into the fact that these are kind of everyday design spaces, but it's the fact that people's freedom is taken away from them that makes it so frightening.
And the fact that there's so little sunlight, so few trees, and the human interaction in these tiny cells. I mean, you are in a studio space here at the Santa Fe Art Institute, where it's a wonderful place. I mean, if people who are listening haven't been down here, it's really worth coming down to see the 140, the SFAI 140, in which you will be speaking. But the space that you are in, everybody gets a little studio as well as being in a much bigger space, is the same size as one of these cells.
Yeah. And I mean, that to me was more of a coincidence to realizing what spatially, I mean, for me, I'm trying to kind of move my drawing practice and trying to see if what does operating at different scales mean? And what does drawing, I mean, I started using tape to draw out plans, elevations, the typical architectural drawings, but at the one-to-one scale, at a scale that you can actually inhabit the drawings.
As if your little studio were one of these cells.
Which is not a commentary about the beautiful space that is SFAI.
Exactly.
But more to think about what is the responsibility and the ethics in terms of the architect as drawer of spaces that will become real, that become built. And to me, I see these kinds of buildings, detention centers, as where architects are being used by the state to create really violent structures. That they are that's what they do, and they have huge consequences. So I'm trying to kind of interrogate the practice of drawing at various scales, because I think when you draw like a plan or you draw a section of the typical kind of floor plans you see, there's a level of removal that you're standing from above, you're looking down into the space, you're not inhabiting it. So I was starting to play with that in the book, where between perspective, where you're inhabiting the space from someone who is actually inside it, to looking at pictures where it's much more above, top down.
And floor plans,
what are called axonometric drawings, very typical in architecture, which also relate to themes of surveillance, etc. So I was starting to really play with what are the tools that I've learned as an architect and using them, I guess, more in this art, I mean, you know, as my art practice.
And one of the things that's really fascinating about this book is that, I mean, with its drawings, with its sort of social commentary, you can use it for many things. And we were talking before about how you use this book to get in to talk to different groups of people.
Absolutely. Like for me, as someone who's really rooted in, you know, organizing and kind of campaign work and grassroots movements, it's really important for me to think about how can this be used to access larger audiences, to build a larger base, let's say. And so, you know, I was mentioning, yes, we can we organize the rallies, we organize the protests. That's one way to reach audiences, and it's very important work. But also, I found that through the book, through drawings, it's a little bit more accessible as a medium. And it means that I've been able to go into, you know, architecture institutes and talk to architects, some of whom have designed prisons, you know, and then going to university classrooms for a graphic design methodologies class, research methodologies class, and talk to them about how, you know, the role of graphic design is also part of the struggle, talking to people who are studying law at the graduate level about legal advocacy, you know, to criminology and various kinds of spaces that I don't think I would be able to access just with my artist hat on or with my activist hat on, or, you know. So I see it as a bit of an organizing tool, as a way to reach the hearts and minds of more people.
Is the situation of immigrants in Canada similar to that of the United States? In other words, here we have criminal detention centers and prisons, and then we have immigrant detention centers, which are under the category of civil law here, which means that people can be held indefinitely and don't have the right to an attorney. What does it look like in Canada?
Yeah, so similarly in Canada, there's a division between civil and criminal law. So immigration is under civil or administrative law. So even though a third of the people in immigrants are actually being put in prisons, the state will say, oh, they're not being punished, they're just being held there for administrative purposes. So some of the depictions are also not only of just designated immigration detention centers, but also prisons that are being used. And I also want to stress that I'm very critical of the criminal justice system and the populations and the communities that get criminalized and put into prisons. And I think that in no way is it about, oh, immigrants are not criminals, therefore they shouldn't be put in detentions. I don't think the prisons, the carceral infrastructure is a solution for what are larger social and economic problems. So what we do have in Canada is also indefinite detention. So in here,
it's the same thing.
Yeah, exactly. So it means that some of the people I know and work with have been in detention for 10 years because the government can't deport them, but they have had no charges, no trial, and there's no end in sight. So these are actually years of people's lives that are being stolen from them and from their communities and from their families and friends.
And from all the good they could do.
Absolutely. So, I definitely do not think that prisons can never be used to enforce immigration law. It just shouldn't be the solution. And I don't think architects should participate in that construction.
Tings Chok is a migrant justice activist and artist. She's here at the Santa Fe Art Institute. Thank you so much for being with us on the Radio Cafe.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for listening to the podcast. To support the program, you can go to radiocafe.org. Many thanks to StudioX.com for their technical support and web design.